Brad Sesmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Good Monday. Thanks for being with us. We will have Peter King jumping on board with us in about 15 minutes via Skype. The Monday Morning Quarterback, Sports Illustrated, SI.com. Peter King with us. That will be fun to talk with Peter about the Cardinals' trashing of Tampa Bay yesterday and also looking ahead to Buffalo, speaking of trash. Let's see. Well, Paula Bova, News and Notes, AZ Central Sports columnist with us. She was in San Antonio for what was a nail-biter for Arizona State and shouldn't have been against UTSA. I had a fine weekend. Friday night, I was watching the ASU game. And I don't know, I put the phone down because some of you just get out of control when you see ASU play, you see no wrong. And whenever somebody brings up, we're 3-0. And in this case, it's Todd Graham. We're 3-0. We're 3-0. We're 3-0. Is it an impressive 3-0? And the answer on that would be no. Is it impressive to the coach? Sure it is. What's he going to say? But anybody who's watched ASU these first three games and is going to tell me that it's an impressive 3-0, you are fooling yourselves, especially with conference play starting this week. The Diamondbacks and Deshaun Watson part ways. So this is the first of many bodies that should be tossed in the street. I wrote about this in my three-dot thoughts on Sunday. And then the Cardinals game. So the Cardinals game, there was a I felt like the first quarter was pretty even. The Buccaneers were moving the football on the ground. They had a couple of nice drives early. And there was a play where Carson Palmer throws a looping ball to Larry Fitzgerald, a little looping pass that Fitz catches. And I think if you look back on the first week and the first five quarters of the season, the looping pass to me was the, okay, now we're going to go and get this thing off and running. You can look at stats and stat me to death. I'm looking for consistency. I'm looking for just methodical movement down the field. And from that play through the rest of the game, it was no game. It was no contest. Jameis Winston was very disappointing. I mean, I know he's got baseball in his blood still, but, man, he was throwing some fastballs and some changeups yesterday. And that was probably a byproduct of the Cardinals' pass rush getting to him about the second quarter. I wasn't overly impressed. Eric, were you overly impressed were their hometown heroes in the first quarter?
No, but I never thought that it was a game they're going to lose. Even at the beginning when the defense was giving up some relatively big plays, Tampa's one of those teams where they're a good team, they're fine, but they're not a threat to the Cardinals. Like, I knew that game was probably going to, I didn't think it would be as lopsided as it was, but sure. I expected a 17 to 20 point win.
Sure. No, and I did as well. Do you remember the play I'm talking about?
Not off the top of my head.
It's just a little looping pass. And from there, they got to find a long snapper. Okay, you got to get your special teams cleaned up. This is all, like, we complain about spring training baseball. And we complain about exhibition football. The NFL is now becoming more and more a sport. Even Bruce said it last week. You don't really know what you've got until October. Okay. So one week, the Cardinals are sitting there and fans are gnashing their teeth over Brandon Williams. Actually, that Brandon Williams did a nice job yesterday when he was out there. He wasn't out there as much. I DVR'd the game, watched it back. So, this was the week where Steve Keim goes and gets Marcus Cooper. And Marcus Cooper comes over here September 2nd. Nobody's heard of Marcus Cooper. Nobody's paying much attention to Marcus Cooper. And what does Marcus Cooper do? He comes out and he plays a terrific ball game for them, not even just on the two interceptions, but beyond that. I felt much more comfortable seeing him out there than Brandon Williams. Doesn't mean Brandon Williams can't play. It's just you can't force feed kids, or you can early in the season. Bottom line is they're a kick away from being 2-0. Okay. And I don't think that they've really put it all together yet. Yesterday, Jameis Winston didn't have his whole plethora of players as the game moved on, and the Cardinals did what they're supposed to do. When a guy doesn't have his whole group, you don't make excuses. You just go out there and you torture him.
Well, especially, yeah. I mean, no Doug Martin.
Yeah.
I mean, he was getting some good chunks of yards early, right. And then he goes down with a hamstring. That completely changed Dirk Cutter's game plan, going with the number two running back. Everything changes after
that. Well, but, you know, Vincent Jackson was not an issue. You know, they tried Mike Evans and Patrick Peterson. That was a nice battle. That was actually, I had the phone in my hand. I'm thinking about, this is what I love about sports, is when you have two really high-end players going head-to-head. It was fun to watch Patrick Peterson go after Mike Evans. I thought Dion Buchanan and Tony Jefferson didn't get really enough attention. The broadcast yesterday was Tom, and they had this crowded booth going on. They're trying to figure their way through it. I like Charles Davis a lot. I thought Tom and Charles did a nice job, and this year they dropped Chris Spielman on them, and they've got a sideline guy, and you know, so there's four mouths to feed in the course of a broadcast. So I'm watching the game, and it's just let the game speak for itself.
Yeah, and the nice thing is Tom and Charles Davis did plenty of and they did plenty of Cardinal games last year, so they're pretty familiar with the team and the ins and outs of the organization.
You know, Kim Dichie didn't play. Am I concerned about that? Well, when they play better teams as the season progresses, you've got to have depth on your defensive front. Okay, and so far Kim Dichie hasn't done much. Let's call it as it is. They, though, are in a very good position, the Cardinals are, to not have to force feed him, to not have to get him out there. But do I want to see a first-round pick wrecking ball be given more chances to play or be out in the field and fight his way through? And the answer is yes. You know, the offensive line yesterday, did Carson take some shots? Sure he did, but I'm not concerned about the number of shots. You're going to get hit. Okay, when somebody sends me, I can't believe Carson's just getting mauled. I didn't think he got mauled yesterday. So it was, look, it was a methodical victory. That's the best way to put it. The way the NFC West is going, and I'll talk to Peter about this in a couple minutes. So the Rams have their home opener. There's a lot of hype. Jared Goff's not playing. They're not going to force feed him. And the Rams beat Seattle for the fourth time in five meetings. They've got their number. They do. And then the 49ers just get destroyed. So, I mean, are the Cardinals even going to be tested within the division? That's the easy narrative. Buffalo is their next game. You know my stance on Rex Ryan. If you've been watching this show, he's a clown show. He's been a clown show. You may like him. There's friends of mine that like Rex Ryan. There's these poor Bills fans that were so excited when they brought him in, but he is a clown show. He is somebody that is going to go sell some tickets and create some buzz in newspapers and online, and that's it. You're going to have to put up with the whole act of winning is much more important. Winning is much more important to me than how many clicks or how many page views or how many ratings points, because that stuff will take care of itself. Stuff will take care of itself. Your content on the field, between the lines, not, oh, he's so funny. He's such a great soundbite. He's so this. He's so much fun to talk to. I don't care. Don't care. It may make our jobs a little bit more difficult. Don't care. And, you know, you guys don't care. You just want to see wins. I don't think you want to see coaches that are braggadocious that can't back it up. I don't think you want to see coaches that talk a big game and don't produce. You know, you're into the deal here where we've been told this is going to be a very good football season for the pro team. And so far, it's been pretty good. You're a missed field goal away from being 2-0. The college team, they're 3-0 here in Phoenix. I don't think they're a very good team. I don't see a team that I look at right now and say anything more than they've won three games. NAU, Texas Tech, UT San Antonio. Shut me up. Prove to me I'm wrong. You open conference play with Cal this week. And I should have high expectations. I'm not one of those people. It's like, oh, we'll get them next year. Fans don't put down money for we'll get them next year. That's not how it works.
And I think ASU is catching Cal at just the right time. Just the right time to get Cal.
Because?
Oh, coming off a big win over Texas.
Did you see
home?
The kid that dropped the ball going into the end zone? Come
I
on.
Did.
Come
it's,
on.
It's happened a few times.
Come on. How is it? How do we have football players that think it's really cool to celebrate before they get to the end zone by doing the dropping of the football?
I saw on Twitter today, I guess Gary Patterson was asking his weekly press conference what he thought of players dropping the ball. And he said, if one of our players does that, they can just go ahead and keep running right into our tunnel and into our locker room.
No, that's
true.
That's exactly right. That's I mean, that's crazy stuff. You know, I watched U of A the other night. I you know, Rich has got to make a decision, I think, here on is Anu, does Anu love football enough? He's been concussed. He's been hit. Does Anu love football enough? Are they better off having Anu? They've got Washington this week, one of the top 10 teams in the country. And you know, Rich is sitting here in a pretty interesting situation with his team, because if they pick the wrong guy at quarterback, they should get boat raced this week.
They should.
They should. So they're going to be 0-1. And yet I look at the Pac-12 South. It's not been good. In fact, for the Pac-12, it's not been good. Outside of Stanford, Stanford could be a team that's playing the national title. I think Washington has that chance. They've got to get pushed and tested. But, man, USC, come on. They didn't show.
Oh, and I'm not surprised. I mean, USC is going to play a brutal schedule, and I never thought they were that talented to begin with. So I'm not completely in disarray about what's going on at USC. But they're an okay team. They're not a top 20 team. They're not a top 15 team. They're just an okay team.
If you look at the South, right? So Colorado gave Michigan a game.
Uh-huh. And that wasn't surprising either.
And on the road, game a game, mm-hmm. Okay? So Utah's just kind of sitting there with nobody talking about where they are at this point in the season.
And they've played okay.
UCLA finds a way to beat BYU. They're just okay.
They're fine.
They're just okay. So if I'm sitting here in Arizona and I open conference play this week, I've got Cal, and then the following 2 weeks I've got USC and UCLA. I'm going to find out in a hurry, and I think Manny Wilkins can get the job done, but gosh, don't give me that we're 3-0. It's not an impressive 3-0 to me. Is it an impressive 3-0 to you?
No, but the sample size is so small in the first 2 weeks of the season, because you're playing the FBS schools and you're playing these non-Power 5, basically not cupcake games, but games you're expected to win. So once we get into the beginning of conference play, you're really going to see, like, it's going to be a lot clearer as to how the pecking order is going to be.
Well, but let's go national then, okay?
Okay.
I want both of these programs to aspire to be great, okay? To be a top 5, top 10 program in the country, not a top 20, 25 program. Because I think both are probably a top 20. They have the potential to be top 20, top 15, maybe. Maybe. So off the weekend, Notre Dame has already gotten whacked twice. Michigan State takes care of them. Texas took care of them. Oklahoma gets just run over by Ohio State. And let's go a little further on Ohio State. Ohio State had, what, 11 players drafted off of last year's team? They had, what, 5 first-rounders? Was it 5 or 6 first-round players off their team last year?
Urban Meyer. That's just all it is.
And Eric, they're sitting there on the road at Oklahoma, and that wasn't even a game. That was not even close.
You talk about underperforming conferences. I saw something earlier today that the Big 12 does not have a team in the top 15 for the first time in Big 12 history, dating back to 1996.
Okay, so let's go over that. Let's go over the Big 10. The Big 10 was known as boring, smash mouth, just awful football to watch. And now it's not. Now you've got track meet going on at Ohio State. You've got track meet going on at Michigan. You've got Michigan State and a well-coached team. You can even throw Wisconsin into the mix, even though I'm not big on that style of play.
It's a very top-heavy conference. I mean, the bottom of the Big Ten is still as bad, if not worse, than any conference
Indiana's
in America.
The Indiana's and Northwestern's. But they've been playing teams.
The Rutgers, the Illinois, the
but they've
Purdue's.
Been playing teams. My point is there's been some big games here to start the season.
Definitely.
Okay.
They've shown out very well the first few weeks of the year.
They've shown out very well. And you know, when I'm watching the SEC and they're playing Mississippi and Alabama in the second week of the year, what does that do for voters? You know, when we're talking about this year, the Final Four is the Fiesta Bowl and the Peach Bowl this year. So those voters are seeing big games every week. Like the Pac-12 has USC and Stanford in prime time for all the country to see. And USC just doesn't look good at all. They ran right through them. So we'll get to more college football as the show moves through. Some Heisman stuff, too. And Bobby Petrino off his motorcycle getting it done at Louisville. How about that? Peter King is next, the Monday morning quarterback. He'll Skype in with us on the Cardinals win. Talk to him about Larry Fitzgerald and the NFC West. That's next. I'm Brad Sussmat. And now Peter King joins us, the Monday morning quarterback, MMQB, on the road all around the National Football League after a couple of weeks. And Peter, I think the Cardinals game against Tampa Bay, you look out on the surface and say this was an angry bunch in Arizona and Tampa laid an egg. What did you make out of that game first and foremost?
You know, Brad, I watched a good deal of the game. I was sort of, I had two screens between this game and the Seattle Rams game. I'll tell you what was really interesting to me about this game, and it continues to be interesting about this team. I think everybody in Arizona, and again, I guess you maybe would equate this to maybe watching Randy Johnson for a long time, maybe even Luis Gonzalez for a long time, although, you know, I think Larry Fitzgerald will go down as a better player in his sport than Luis Gonzalez in his sport. But
agreed.
But be that as it may, I mean, I think when I'm watching last Sunday and I'm watching the game in week two this week, I just say, you know, I really hope that people in the Valley and people throughout the Southwest really appreciate what they're seeing in Larry Fitzgerald and really appreciate the fact that they're seeing a top 10 receiver of all time in their midst who, even though year after year after year, John Brown, Michael Floyd, Jerron Brown, everybody they're bringing in, and game after game after game, there's Carson Palmer leaning on Larry Fitzgerald. And, you know, Brad, I think we all thought a couple of years ago when Michael Bidwill extended Larry Fitzgerald, we said, boy, that's
risky.
That thing is going to not look so great in like the last year. But, I mean, this is incredible to say because I think he's going to retire before this ever happens. I think he'll basically pull a David Ortiz. I think he's still going to be playing great and walk away. But if he wanted to, he could get another contract out of this, and he wouldn't be cheating anybody.
Mm. What's your gut tell you about his future? This season, as some are saying, with the length of the deal? What do you think in the future?
I sat down with him in training camp and recorded 17 minutes for my podcast. And we're either going to have that out either this week or next week. I'm not sure which week we're going to use it. But we talked a lot about history and all that. And I got the sense, I mean, absolutely no way is he going to play long enough to chase Jerry Rice. But, and I know Ian Rappaport said last week that this could be it for him. But I simply don't know, Brad. I'd be lying if I said that. I don't know how much longer he's going to play. I don't think it'll be long. I think it'll be this year or next year. My gut feeling is that if they're close and they haven't won, my gut feeling is he'd give it another year in 17. But again, I don't know that. And, you know, football seasons are very strange. It's impossible on September 19th to tell how you're going to feel on December 19th.
Yep.
It's just, you just can't. You're going to be physically damaged way too much. And my feeling is that he can play as long as he wants, and walking away after this year or next year, neither would surprise me.
And you see those 100 catches with the same team, touchdowns, you know, Antonio Gates is on that list, Jerry Rice is on that list. And you go through the names, and to your point about the greatness that we're seeing in him, I guess from my view, I've seen the evolution of him. You know, he did not like to be physical when Ken Wisenhunt got here and Wiz challenged him, whether or not they agreed with each other. And then Kurt challenged Larry. I saw Kurt last Friday night out coaching his son at a high school game, and we were talking about Larry a little bit. And to see Bruce moving him inside and to see how he's just evolved. The great ones have to evolve, don't they, Peter? You can't just do the same
No
thing.
Question.
And Larry's
because
evolved.
I think it's so interesting. I mean, I'm sure Larry Fitzgerald, when he came out of Pitt, wanted to be, you know, sort of what Randy Moss was. You know, he wanted to be split out. Hey, keep your hands off me. I'm quick enough to get off the bump. Let me just wreak havoc down the field. But I think the last few years, people have seen how great a player he is when he plays inside. And I think right now he is such a dangerous weapon, both inside and outside. And you talk about him evolving. I mean, look, he's always been a garrulous, friendly, welcoming sort for the guys on his team. But, you know, I know, every receiver, every player wants his touches. No right. question about it.
Right.
But he understands that the way for the Arizona Cardinals to win a Super Bowl or have the best chance to win a Super Bowl is that when John Brown, Michael Floyd, Jerron Brown, and Larry Fitzgerald all line up in a 2x2 formation, that the defense has to be mystified as to where Carson Palmer is going with the ball. And to do that, he's got to throw it to other people. So I think, and he realizes that, and I think he's happy with that. Jerron Brown catches a touchdown pass, you know, here against Tampa. And I'm positive that Larry thinks, hey, that's really good for our team.
Talking with Peter King, the Monday morning quarterback, moving ahead now to Buffalo. So Rex Ryan was here many, 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 many moons ago that we remember the buddy years of having the Ryans here. And now you look at what's going on in Buffalo. Here's a desperate team that fires their coordinator. You wrote it in MMQB. It's probably something that should have happened in the offseason. A desperate team, a dangerous team for the Cardinals this Sunday. Peter, what do you think?
Oh, I think the team is basically a train wreck.
Yeah.
And, you know, you don't fire your offensive coordinator 5 days into the season. I wrote in my column today that the Buffalo Bills, the Pegulas, who, you know, look, they're not Paul Allen. I mean, they've got a lot of money, but they're not bottomless. They're going to pay Greg Roman $3 million over the next 16 months to not coach their football team. I mean, that has to really burn the Pegulas. And that's why, to me, this is a team that is in danger. Now, you're right. Dangerous teams back up against the wall. Who knows? The old cliche.
Sure.
But, Brad, I'll tell you this. Probably the best overall player who they'll field, you know, who they can field right now is Sammy Watkins, the wide receiver they traded to once from. He's a marvelous player, tremendously gifted player. He is a damaged player. He's got a bad foot. He's either got a broken foot that he's trying to play through, but I mean, against the Jets, he was worthless. You know, and so when Tyrod Taylor and Sammy Watkins got together a bunch last year, that was a dangerous combination. But there's really nobody else other than Marquise Goodwin who can really take the top off of defense, but he's a real inexperienced receiver. I don't think the Bills are gonna present much of a problem for Arizona.
I would agree with you, a speed bump on that case, but there is that side of it where people say you can't have your letdown. Before I let you go, NFC West, a couple of weeks in, Seattle's offensive struggles, is Russell Wilson healthy, the ankle, no Marshawn Lynch. Is that the overriding story to you in the NFC West, or is it the Rams returning, the 49ers up and down? What do you make out of the West, Peter?
The biggest surprise to me in the division right now is not that Arizona lost to New England at home, or that San Francisco pasted the Rams in week one, or that the Rams beat the Seahawks. I mean, the Rams have beat the Seahawks four of the last five times right. they've met. Biggest surprise to me is that Seattle has had 22 possessions in two games. They've scored one touchdown.
Wow.
They scored it on a fire drill desperation drive. Seattle through eight quarters cannot line up on offense and do anything consistently. I mean, if I had to guess right now, I think Arizona is going to win this division by three games, but that's just a guess. And you never know what might happen. Seattle could get well. Jermaine Ifedi, their high draft choice, who they're playing at guard, could get healthy and could really provide a boost. But right now, they're just so inconsistent on offense. I don't trust anything they do.
Peter, stay well. Appreciate the time and the visit as always. Thanks.
All the best, Brad. Take care.
Giving you the inside slant on the weekend's biggest stories. It's time for News and Notes with AZ Central sports columnist Paula Bovin. Here again, Brad Sesmat.
News and Notes with Paula Bovin, fresh off a weekend where she was in San Antonio for 24 hours?
Okay.
Were you in San Antonio for 24 hours, Paula?
Pretty much. Maybe a few hours longer, but not much. It was a very quick trip.
And then you were over at the Cardinals yesterday, yes?
Yes, indeed.
And your overriding takeaway from the weekend?
A couple of things. I think it was positive for Valley sports in general, for Valley sports fans. I thought that as annoying for fans as it was how Arizona State played early in the game, I thought the way their defense came back was important. I think that, you know, they're going to have a tough road in the Pac-12 tournament, but for them starting 3-0, I think is huge because I thought there was going to be a slip-up at some point there. And as far as the Cardinals game, really impressive, just the way the defense played. I think they found their, at least opposite starting cornerback from Patrick Peterson for now. I thought the offense looked like it was working well. So, a happy moment, I think, for Valley sports fans.
I just had Peter King on, and he said that he believes the Cardinals will win the NFC West by 3 games. What do you think of that thought coming from somebody like Peter, and do you see that the same way?
Oh, I don't know. I kind of see it going to the wire a little bit, only because I think the Seattle we're seeing now is going to be different when Russell's ankle is healthier. I think it's going to give him more options. You know, the Rams shown a little more than I thought. Maybe we'll see how long that lasts. I just think these games are going to be pretty competitive. I still think the Cardinals can win the division, certainly, but I don't know if it's going to be by 3 games.
You know, in terms of ASU, I want to focus on them for a few minutes. So Todd is all wound up about we're 1-0, we're 2-0, we're 3-0. There are differences between good 3-0 teams and mediocre 3-0 teams. And let's not get too far ahead of ourselves. It is 3 non-conference games. I don't think they're a terrific team. I think they have some nice parts. It's pretty clear N'Keal Harry is a difference maker like they haven't had since Jaylen Strong. And, you know, the defense of the team still gives up some big plays. Am I wrong in this thought that they're not a great 3-0 team?
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, that's why though I think it's good they were able to go 3-0 and get that big win over Texas Tech and survive this last game because they do have to battle a lot of hurdles. I think this coming game against Cal will be revealing. I mean, it's at home. Obviously, that's going to help them. But I think across the board, you're talking about better athletes than what you're seeing on any of these 3 teams, better depth, better talent at the skill positions. I think this will be a better measuring stick. And, you know, I think the road pretty much gets harder from there. So, you know, but I guess for fans saying, why aren't you harder on them? This is what I expected going into the season. I mean, I thought they were lacking in some areas defensively. I think Manny Wilkins, you know, a guy who'd never thrown a pass in a game. I mean, there's going to be some down spots, and the belief was once they kind of get more of their recruits in by next year, you'll have a more experienced quarterback, that they'll be a lot better team. I kind of subscribe to that school of thought. Wilkins, actually, to me, has been a little bit better than I thought. He's had his ups and downs, but I think he's able to manage an offense, and having that kind of a running game, and I think some better efforts by the offensive line, which there's a lot of, I think, concern by ASU. I mean, I think that's going to help carry them through the season.
He cannot keep hurdling players, Paula. If you talk to him directly about this hurdling thing, every game, I think he's going to get blown up at some point. And he actually did get a really big hit on him in that UTSA game. At some point, he's got to learn how to get down, young man. Just fall to the turf.
I know. It just seems to be that's his sort of go-to when he's looking for an option. And, you know, he's done it pretty successfully beyond that. And, you know, I think I mentioned to you, he's a tough nut to crack this season. He's not saying much. So to get a kind of an idea or feeling about where his head is, it's been tough for sure this year.
How we're talking with Paula Bova, News and Notes, AZ Central sports columnist, and more importantly, my friend. The whole thing with Todd Graham after games in this, we're 1-0, we're 2-0. Is he more surly this year? Is he shorter this year? I know they worked with him in the offseason with his media. What have you found him? How have you found him to be after games? I'm not there. You are.
You know what? He's not glaringly different. I think there's a little bit of a more chip on his shoulder this year. He's revealed, I think, sort of the criticism of last season, and then the sort of people's reactions even to their victories this year have kind of taken him back a bit. But so I think there's a little bit of a chip on his shoulder feeling, but, you know, for the most part, he's still Todd Graham. I mean, he's been very accessible. He's very rah-rah. That's his nature. Yeah. He's going to speak positively and big about his team. And, you know, that was all great, I think, for fans until they had a down season last year. It didn't seem to bother anybody. So there's a little difference. And, you know, it may even work to their advantage that he and the players are a little bit up against the world. You know, I think they're kind of using that in their mindset.
Over on the baseball side, so Deshaun Watson is the first body to get dropped and blown out in the street. And there's got to be more than that. There just has to be more than that coming here in the next 2 weeks, isn't there?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. And I'm not honestly, Brad, that tapped in with that organization to know. But it seems inevitable based on how poorly they've played. And this whole awkwardness of having these guys in leadership positions that had such great reputations coming in, you know, La Russa and Dave Stewart, and then people are looking at them in a whole different angle. I'm sure it's sort of a delicate balance by the Diamondbacks of how you sort of handle things. So I don't know for sure that one or both of those guys are gone, but I can't imagine there aren't discussions about it. I just don't think there's going to be one person that's blown out and that's it.
Because I'm just tired. I'm tired of a lot of things in sports, but I'm tired of the organization trying to deflect away just how awful they've been on the field by constantly barraging us in our profession with the press release of the great organization on a business side, the endless stuff about the promotions at the ballpark, the thing about Derek's house being on the market. I mean, there comes a point where it's like, guys, your team's not good, and you're going to have to take your medicine. We're not going to sit here and sugarcoat this stuff with all these things. It feels like a total PR campaign has been put on us like never before over there, Paula.
Yeah, and I know the marketing wheels are spinning like crazy, but, I don't think they're thinking about us. I think they're thinking about fans and how to keep fans coming to the ballpark, and if it's endless promotions, I don't think they care how we look upon it if it's getting more fans into the ballpark. You
but
know,
they want us. They want us to mention it. They want us to write about it. They want us to. The TV, these TV news people should just stop going down there and putting them on and just saying, "You guys are bad. Take your medicine." That's my thing.
Yeah, I get that, but I mean, I also understand that there are marketing departments, and that is their job. The PR job is to spin it in a way that reflects positively on the organization, and that's their main goal now. Again, I think maybe they want us to do certain things, but I also don't think they're thinking that much about us and just thinking about ways to keep people coming back to the ballpark and, maybe hoping one or two happy stories will be reported.
So we're 2 weeks away from that train wreck being over. We are starting up. We are starting up a week from today. The Suns and the Coyotes are reporting this week. And while we're all into what's going on the football end of things, I think both organizations have had a pretty good 3 month span here. Would you agree on that? As we start to turn the sports calendar into some other teams in town.
No question. And I mean, it's inevitable almost every season. Is it sort of optimism? You kind of forget all the bad things that happened the year before if you're a fan, and you feel energized. It's certainly, in the Suns' case, I think they've done a lot of good things. I think they've done it right with some of the things they've done in the community with Devin Booker and getting some of these guys exposed on a more personal and human level. I think that people are sort of embracing that. I think people like Earl Watson and want him to succeed. And
agreed.
I think they're going to give the Suns a chance. Now, if they start looking awful pretty quickly, that's all going to change. But that's why we love sports, right? There's this sort of renewed optimism. You forget all that crappy stuff from the season before and do it. And I think in both cases, the Suns and the Coyotes, who have made some nice moves and some big changes in the offseason, I think fans can sort of at least feel a little bit good about some of the things they've done.
I'll let you go off that. Appreciate your time and insight as always. Thanks.
All right, Brad.
See you later. There's Paula Bova, News and Notes, AZ Central sports columnist. I saw where I have not seen the Cardinal numbers yet from yesterday. This should not surprise anybody. The Vikings-Packers game last night, okay, got a great number, but It was down 16% year-to-year from Seahawks-Packers week two a year ago. So the ratings for the NFL are down, which doesn't mean much because the NFL has this new deal with Twitter on Thursday night games. I actually was experimenting and playing around with that last Thursday night.
It's super cool. It's super cool, by the way.
Yeah.
It's really cool. I mean, and it's a real clean feed. Like,
it's,
I was at home
late.
And I was...
It's late. It's like late. 8 seconds delayed.
It's late, but if you're on a good Wi-Fi, it streams crystal clear. It's about, yeah, you're right. It's about a play and a half behind.
But for people, as things change in our industry, as viewing habits change, you know, there was this time, remember when you'd go to the Cardinal game and they gave you these little QB1s and you could keep track of your fantasy from your seat? And I forget
See different replays from different angles inside the stadium.
Who was it that was their spokesperson? There's a couple NFL guys we put on, and then that's gone, right? So they're always trying to find a different way to reinvent, which is just great. I don't see the day, I don't see my Sundays the same way moving forward. Because I'm on a DVR, I'll go to some Cardinal games this year, but I don't need to go. And I don't need to sit there at 1 o'clock. I don't. And people say, well, sports is the only thing that's DVR proof. No, you can go out and still enjoy your day. And if somebody tells me the final score, don't care. That's me. I'm going to see it differently than most because this is my job. So last night, the Vikings and Packers, I did not sit there and watch it straight through. I DVR'd it. I zipped through it this morning at 5:30. It's what I do.
Good game.
Phoenix finished as the number five market in the country last night for that game in terms of watching it. Minnesota was one. Milwaukee was two. Denver, New Orleans, Phoenix. Portland, I don't know why Portland would be in that mix. Las Vegas, Albuquerque, Sacramento, Norfolk.
Las Vegas? Really?
Las Vegas.
No.
I know. Shocking,
the
right?
Only game on a Sunday night in the NFL?
Now, I get it. I get all the Packer and Viking fans that have come out here that have been deported.
That was the first thing I thought about.
Yeah, the people from Wisconsin and Minnesota that have figured out that you come out here for half the year.
And look at all the Packer fans that make their way to UOP when the Packers are
out. Sure. So that's a game that's going to draw people, but there's no Los Angeles. There's no New York. There's no Philadelphia.
I mean, Chicago.
No Chicago.
Which is surprising because that's a interdivision game. I would think all the Bears fans would want to watch Packers-Vikings.
Yeah, and so in the ratings part of it, when you break it down, you hear that we have the greatest thing ever because we're the highest rated this and that. There's other stuff that's on. You know, I watched Narcos last night. I'm totally into Narcos. I'm into season two of Narcos. I could go watch the NFL whenever. It's DVR. Narcos was the bomb for me last night. And if you haven't seen Narcos, I see it trending occasionally, but it's awesome.
And the Emmys were last night, too.
Emmys were last night. That's right. Did you watch?
No, I did not watch any of it. I just knew it was last night.
My 22-year-old was trying to get me to watch some Emmys last night, and I was like, no, I'm not. I'm watching Pablo Escobar's story. Thank you very much.
You said the way that viewing habits are changing, and it's clear because if you notice how ESPN is now promoting their Saturday games, it's not only watch on ESPN. Now it's stream live on your mobile device, on your iPad, whatever. It's not just, hey, turn to ESPN at noon Eastern for fill in the blank against fill in the blank. Now it's, if you're on the road, you can watch it on ESPN, watch ESPN. You'd never saw that 2 years ago even.
Saturday morning, I'm coaching my son's basketball game at 9 a.m. And what's on at 9 a.m.? Louisville, Florida State. Great game.
Well, it was supposed to be.
I get done with that. I drop him at water polo. I go work out for 2 hours. What am I doing? I'm on a podcast. It has nothing at all to do with sports. Then what am I in the afternoon? I DVR'd it. I went back, zipped right through it. Took me like 40 minutes. Okay, I know what I'm going to talk about on the show. And that Saturday night, I was doing a soccer game, doing a United game. Came home, U of A, went through that. Had the USC Stanford game, went through that. So you just segment and you simplify your viewing habits. You still see everything. Guys, if you're wiping out 6 hours, 9 hours out of a day to just sit and watch sports, that stuff's over. It's over. I mean, you may like it, but it's kind of like going to a coffee shop and watch how many people hold up a newspaper. It doesn't happen. We got more coming up after this timeout. So tomorrow's show, I have Michael Fabiano from the NFL Network, all things around the fantasy football scene. It'll be good to catch up with Michael. Also going to have Derek Hagan on tomorrow's show. So you Sun Devil fans know him as a terrific wide receiver. He had his run in the NFL, and I think he's finding his mark and his way now as an analyst. He's the first-year sideline reporter and pregame show host. Eric, is he doing some postgame too? Have you heard him the other night.
I did. I heard him during the game, but I was out of my car before the postgame show started.
So. Was he ripping the team apart on the air?
No. I thought he did a really nice
job. You think
he
should? You think he should crush the team?
Well, when like Derek. When warranted, that's what...
When warranted, but a sideline reporter, the thing on a sideline reporter is you're an ambulance chaser, right?
Yep.
You're going to have coaches that don't want too much stuff being said of what is being said down there. So I've heard sideline reporters, let's go down to the field with so-and-so. Yeah, it's really intense down here, and everybody's really excited, and back to you. Okay, got it.
Or you're the guy or girl who gets tossed to when there's a play in the far corner of the end zone, right, and the press box is up, and let's go down to Derek Hagan, who hopefully had a better look to see if he had a foot inbounds.
Derek, what did you see? I'm down on the field. I had 10 guys in front of me, but sure, it looked like a touchdown, you know. No, I think he's doing a good job, and they're 3-0. And are they a good 3-0? It's up for debate. A lot of fans weighed in on Friday night and said, Brad, this isn't a good team. Well, it's a work in progress. It's 3-0 on one hand. The other hand is, are they Ohio State? No, nobody's Ohio State. Are they Stanford? You know, I think that it's very fair to ask these questions now with the conference play getting underway. But I'm interested to talk to Derek about N'Keal Harry. So we've seen Jalen Strong come and go, and it was very evident when Jalen Strong rolled into Tempe that he was going to be something else. He was a quiet, shy kid, but athletically, he was out of control. And then by the time he left, his personality came out. That matters to some people, and to some people it does. His skills were better and better and better. We've seen N'Keal Harry. We've done stories on him when he was over at Chandler High. And now we see him at ASU, and he's got to grow up. Still get to class, you know, do all the things you're supposed to do. I'm not just saying him, but any of these kids. Be on time, get to class, do your thing. Don't let all this stuff get to your head very, very early. So I'm looking forward to talking to Derek Hagan. That'll be on tomorrow's show. And then Pedro's going to be with us on Wednesday, our weekly conversation with Pedro Gomez, ESPN baseball analyst and insider. And I bring up Pedro today. He's with Tim Tebow today. So I'm sitting here getting ready for the show, and I look up, and there's Pedro looking like, he was slick today, Eric. I don't know what his deal was, but he's at Tebow, and he's holding up a Tebow jersey, and Tebow's taking batting practice, and that is going to be in the news cycle for sure in the next 24 hours about Tim Tebow, and we'll have Pedro on that, plus the dumpster fire that is the Diamondbacks now letting go of their assistant GM, Deshaun Watson, and then who's next. Of course, our television show, Brad Sussmat Football AZ, it's on Fox Sports Arizona. It airs 7 times on Tuesday, 7 times on Wednesday, and other airings as well as they see fit, as we see fit. Thanks for being with us.